Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't gamble. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast. Monday, December 12th. All things NFL Week 14 on the docket. What we saw, what disappointed us, what surprised us. Look ahead lines for all things NFL Week 15. The Monday movie review. Payne and I checked out Nocturnal Animals. I think you guys will be intrigued by what we have to say there. And of course, the AGA big game breakdown for tonight, Ravens Patriots. And as always, all of your numbers brought to you courtesy of Bet Online. Payne, the Saints did not go marching in for us yesterday, but we march on here on Bet the Board.
Ugly. They didn't get there for us or our loyal listeners. I don't think we're the guys that make excuses. We lost. We all watched these games. We all have eyes. We all sat there, watched Cadet drop a touchdown, Cooks drop a touchdown. The Saints set a season record with 13 penalties. They were -3 in turnover differential. We all saw that. So no need for excuses. We lost. Let's move on. I believe our third official loss through 14 weeks?
Yeah, I don't think it's not going to send anybody to the poorhouse, that's for sure. And it's always funny when you talk about the NFL, you remember those close losses. There was another game we ended up losing by the hook. Get two totals to break our way at the end of half. And you really try and have to look at the big picture because one game may stick out, but for every bad break you have, you do this long enough, you're going to inevitably have games that you don't deserve falling in the win column. And unfortunately, like you mentioned, a couple drop passes, New Orleans unable to get in the end zone. You're going to tell me the Bucs score 16 points. I'm going to tell you we cover that game 99% of the time.
And listen, like I know the content we provide. I know the information we provide. We're all grown-ups here. I will never, ever, ever, ever apologize for a loss. And so when you talk about us averaging, you know, 12 to 15,000 listeners a show, a few idiots on social are really a micro percentage of what we encounter. So like 99.9% of our listeners are fantastic. They're smart and appreciative, and a handful of great emails that I got last night. So I'll be getting back to them at some point today. But as you mentioned, we did catch a nice break yesterday. Personally, I'm just not sure which one of us are going to be sending Mike Nugent a holiday card this season.
Yeah, you watch that Browns-Bengals total, and you go, I'm not really sure we got a snowball's chance in hell here. You get six field goals in Jacksonville and Minnesota. So, you know, there's a number of games that go a couple different ways. We try and provide as much insight as we could. The Texans, you know, wasn't an official selection. We said that had some legs there at +6.5, +7. So, you know, it goes both ways. We say there's certain sides we like, certain sides we don't. We can't endorse a play on all 16 NFL games as much as our listeners would like. And hey, the top game that we gave out lost. We're big boys. And as you said, we'll move on. You know what, Payne? The thing about this business, we're not going to lose a game again. We even may lose two games the remainder of this NFL season.
Well, you know, to put the whole thing in perspective, like I'm probably going to lose a game today. That's kind of just the reality of this whole thing. And I know we're in a sometimes thankless
position. I'm going to say most of the time it's a thankless occupation and a position because people expect you to win at rates that just aren't sustainable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And it's this is kind of just to give you the real of what this business is and what a long-term play this business is. I think if I graded my preseason first 7-8 weeks, I'd be, you know, cutting myself short if I said we hit 70% through that timetable. The last 6 weeks, though, and this is just reality, I'm personally in the NFL 25-23-1. And so you get this long-term approach where you're going to have these lulls. You're not going to be able to sustain that type of early run. And so, you know, for our listeners, we know they're not betting just what we give them. They're going to be betting other things as well. But from a perspective, if you're a weekend warrior, kind of just throw this little tangent out the window. But if you're a weekend warrior, it's the reason why, you know, 99% of the community has their largest edge game every Saturday and Sunday to kind of lure you in there. But if you're looking at this long term, you know, how dumb would it sound that, hey, I'm going to buy a house and try to sell it 3 hours later and expect profit? This is a market. You can beat the market every single game, and you can have these lulls where for a month straight you're basically flipping coins. I mean, if your downswing is 50%, you know, you're doing something right.
Well, that's the whole thing, and I think it's important to put in perspective, not only for us, but folks that may be new to this business. It's great when things are going well and you're finding stretches where you're 8-2 over the course of 10 games, you're going 15-5 over 20 games. Capitalize to the best of your ability there. The true difference between a professional and a weekend warrior is that when you're going through these lulls, if you're at 48, 49, 50%, it's not a damning indictment. If you have good money management and you're employing the fundamentals and principles that'll keep you in the game long enough, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, hey, sometimes it can go on for 3 or 4 months that you're treading water and spinning your wheels. Just don't go blow your bankroll there. Wait for that next heater that's around the corner and be able to capitalize and take full advantage when it's there.
Yeah, I mean, that's absolutely spot on. And I think the other thing that, you know, is an interesting industry topic. And so like yesterday, we didn't have a great day. I had way too much volume for what I usually like, but I was able to differentiate my edge a little bit to where I go 6-5 and pick up nearly two positions because some of the losers were of lesser stature. And the one of our winners was, you know, one of the larger games I played. So being able to, and we talk about this all the time, every single game's its own entity. And what's tough, I think, for a lot of our listeners to realize that every game's not the same and you need to be changing your bet sizing is what the community tells us, right? There's this idea, and I kind of alluded to this, where guys that are selling information, suddenly Saturday and Sunday, they know the weekend warriors are out in full force, they're going to have their 100-star lock or their 8% play because they know you're coming to purchase that. It doesn't necessarily mean they know what their true edge is. They're just trying to sell a game. And because of that, it's been perceived that you need to flat bet. But it couldn't be one of the larger industry misconceptions. You have to be able to figure out not just the game you like, but how large of an edge you have with that game.
Well, and one other thing on top of that, not to disagree with you, play a little devil's advocate. I do think flat betting can be useful for bettors that are trying to figure out. If you're just getting started in this business, the ability to identify an edge and what makes a position stronger or weaker, I think can take some time. So I don't want to see people fluctuating their bet size, especially a lot of listeners, you know, one position here, five positions there. So that can be dangerous, but you're exactly right. You know, none of the professionals out there that do this for a living are going into every game betting the same amount, not even within the same sport. You know, the NFL may be much stronger, so your one position in the NFL may be, you know, 10 to 15 dimes, and one position in college basketball, maybe 2 to 3. I think that's important as well. There isn't anybody out there that I know of, and Payne, hey, correct me if I'm wrong, that is extremely successful and sees themselves as an effective handicapper the same way in the NFL, NBA, college basketball, NHL, Major League Baseball, NASCAR, UFC, boxing. You have to be able to differentiate your strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that. I was more alluding to what's being sold out there and then what's kind of being perceived as reality. And I think you alluded to it, being self-aware, knowing your capabilities as a handicapper plays a huge role. But yes, you nailed it spot on. You know, for me, it's NFL, NBA. And once you kind of get in your circles, it becomes an exchange of information where I'm not as good at. I rely on a lot of strong information, whether it's me giving my NFL information for college football information or whatever it is. That's kind of, you know, the reality of the situation. You're kind of playing nice with certain folks. There's a lot of just business relationships that are built because you're strong in one area and they're strong in another. And it basically keeps you afloat for, you know, the full 365.
Yeah, and I think this industry web is a lot bigger than anybody imagines. But that may be a discussion for a different day or when you ultimately decide to write your autobiography, Payne. We can do the full tell-all story of what actually takes place, not only on game day, but the Monday through Saturday leading up to the NFL week before you ultimately plunk down your cash and sweat out the positions to keep food on the table, so to speak.
I'm just a tout, bro.
And on that note, we may as well go into recapping some of what we saw NFL Week 14. And let's start with the Sunday night game, Payne. And I'm going to go off on a little bit of a story. I was at a holiday party watching the Cowboys-Giants game with a number of loyal Bet the Board listeners. And they said they loved the line that you delivered on Thursday. I don't love the game at 3, but if it gets to +4, I'm going to get to the party. And they wanted me to say that, hey, for them, you getting to the party, that party had perks for them last night with the Giants getting the cash as a 4-point underdog. The Cowboys starting to look human. 3 straight failed attempts at the number, but finally losing for the first time since Week 1. Dak Prescott, 3 straight games under 200 yards. By designer, is this time to start to panic with Dallas?
Well, unfortunately, I didn't follow my own advice there. Not only could I have locked in 4, I could have done so pretty cheaply at -105, still didn't get to the party. And I know it's a pretty funny reference because all the guys you hang out with are kind of in that nightclub industry. You sent me some pictures. Woo! I hope you had a good evening with there, one specific lovely lady. If you did not,
there was a There was a little bit of talent at the party, but no, I had to kind of hand that off. But again, that's a that's a different story for a different day. There may or may not be ice luge pictures that'll be up on Instagram that I can circulate. But let's say it was is a good festive atmosphere, not only from the company, but also because they all sat on New York Giants +4 tickets.
Yeah, that's always nice when you hang out with people that use your information and it gets to the window. Much, much funner. I'm going to use that word, funner,
that's,
party.
That's not a real word.
The drink seemed to
not
go
a
down
real
a little
word.
Smoother. No, I like funner.
Okay.
I think to your question, it's a little of both for the Cowboys offense and Dak. It's somewhat by design. If you look at some of this, the Cowboys are the most run-heavy team in the NFL. They're actually the only team that runs more than they pass. And I want to say there's probably a little regression from Dak. We didn't think he would be this good, and we're not the only ones. You talk about a lot of scouts and how many NFL teams passed on him for him to last that long. So there's been a little lightning in the bottle here, but you talk about the last 2 weeks. They faced 2 teams defensively that are top 7 in efficiency. I think this is a larger probably thing for the Giants. I like what they're doing defensively. I think we're probably the first one to the Giants' defensive train. We talked about this in the preseason podcast. And granted, it's tough to tell defenses early on in the season ahead of offenses, but when you talked about preseason ones versus ones, this Giants' defense was awesome. You know, they did a lot of things in the offseason. Yes, they spent money, but Spagnuolo kind of in year 2 of his second tenure with the Giants, but you pick up Harrison as a run stopper, you get Vernon, you add 3 cornerbacks, one in the first round with Apple, but you know, you get a nice little buy in Leon Hall there, very cheap get. JPP has the bounce back season, probably attributed to seeing single teams on the outside with Vernon on the other, and then Collins takes a step forward. So I think a lot of it had to do with the Giants defense.
Yeah, and there are a couple key stats that jumped off the page for me watching that game. First off, Dez Bryant, 9 targets, 1 catch for, I believe, 10 yards. 6 total turnovers in the football game, 3 aside. You look at yardage, both teams finished the game 260 yards per play, basically dead even. But the Giants, they showed a commitment to the ground game that we haven't seen. Eli Manning was flat out, I don't want to say terrible, but I think that
terrible.
Probably is the right
word
terrible. To use. Terrible, aside from that slant pass to Odell Beckham. Rashad Jennings and Perkins, both 15 carries for 45 yards apiece. So the Giants at least have a semblance of a ground game. So many people talking about them maybe being a dark horse, but is this offense good enough? And do we think once the bright lights of the postseason, assuming the Giants get there, are going to be enough for Eli to turn the corner and show some big play potential that involves a player not named Odell Beckham Jr.?
We kind of joked about this, and I remember, I think it was the Giants-Vikings game, and a couple guys sent us GIFs of what I alluded to was Eli being a fish out of water. I mean, any time there is pressure coming his way, it is this frantic moment where the ball becomes a hot potato and he's trying to get rid of it. He's a little soft. But I think when you talk about the Giants, we talk about a veteran team, a team that's been there before. Eli knows the ropes this time of year. When you look at that game, though, that's your typical familiarity between division foes. Dallas is a team that says, listen, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to punch you in the damn mouth. And the Giants responded well to that. It was a late December game, cold weather, division teams. There wasn't going to be a ton of scoring in that one. So Don't want to take too much from it, but that game's a little bit different if Eli doesn't turn over at key junctures in the game. And basically, in the green and red zone of those games, I think probably the Giants were the right side.
And from +4, getting to you to the party with a few perks along the way, to the Thursday night game where the Raiders went into Arrowhead and looked absolutely anemic offensively, couldn't surpass 220 yards of total offense. The Chiefs, to their credit, they did it again. Another non-offensive touchdown, but to their credit, for the first time since October 30th, actually outgained their opponent. What's this Chiefs ceiling, in your opinion? And do we start to give Kansas City's defense credit, or the Raiders' offense to take the blame for the way that they looked in that game?
I think a few things. One, we talked about Alex Smith getting some weapons back. So you get Macklin back, it allows you not to focus on Kelsey. He was dominant over the middle. You get Tyreek Hill implemented in the offense, and he was basically, while Macklin was out, their key offensive contributor. Now you can't key on him. He's getting acclimated to the offense. He's gaining confidence. You have three really nice weapons there for Alex Smith. Defensively, there still are some concerns there. Houston helps them get after the passer. Dee Ford back now fully healthy. But you talk about a team that has issues stopping the run game, and now Derek Johnson's out. That's a huge loss. But we talk about preparation, and one thing we know with Andy Reid might not be great in-game management. We saw a little brain fart there with an early challenge that just didn't make any sense. So that's his Achilles heel, but the preparation, his team is always going to be there.
Yeah, and you look at Kansas City right now in firm control of their own destiny in the AFC playoff picture. We could be talking about the Chiefs getting a first-round bye if things break the right way and they're able to hold serve in their remaining schedule.
What did you make of the Raiders?
You know what? We haven't been high on the Raiders, and I feel like the Raiders have been a team that owns real estate in my head. I mean, I have a running joke with Adam Schein where I pick against them pretty much every week on his show. I think that they looked ill-equipped to run the football, and whether we want to attribute that to Osemele with a late scratch on the left side, but their play calling, for as bad as the Raiders were, they didn't take advantage of the turnovers. They had a chance to gain all the momentum early in the second half with Kansas City turning the ball over on back-to-back plays. Even late in the game with Oakland driving, on a 3rd and 1, you're throwing a fade pattern, taking the penalty. Just some real questionable decision-making, to say the least. But that may be the worst that we see Derek Carr. And I don't want to say he's removed himself from the MVP discussion, because I think that's a little bit too knee-jerk. And whether it was the finger affecting him, I still don't know, and would love to know what happened on Amari Cooper on that ball up in the air that just all of a sudden changed direction. I don't think I can take too much away from the Raiders. And if anything, Payne, for as bad as their defensive metrics look and as critical as we've been on that side of the ball, Khalil Mack simply goes out there and changes games every time he has a chance to get to the quarterback.
Mack is a game changer. For the Raiders, you know, that was a tough loss. You go from being the top seed, hosting a playoff game, now you're dropping all the way down to 5 and going on the road. So that was a huge loss. I don't want to say it was their Super Bowl. You get cold weather there for a West Coast team. That was tough for them to handle. And I think the Derek Carr injury, I know he was great in the postgame presser, wouldn't make excuses. But in the cold weather,
yeah, it's tough.
That pinky really affected him and how he threw the ball. I think I saw NFL Network come out with that pass to Amari Cooper. Somehow it hit like the spider cam and it deflected it and changed the total momentum of where the ball was going. The biggest thing for me, and it's a guy that I want to throw little jabs at, Marquette King. Ooh, ooh, ooh. Can you envision this, where a guy knows his special teams unit just sprinted down the field 60, 70 yards, and on the re-kick, you were going to punt it directly down the middle? Now, clearly, that cost them the game when you look at the final score. I'm not going to say a punter should ever make a tackle on Tyreek Hill, but hey, maybe use the out-of-bounds line as an extra defender there. And then again, on the field goal, isn't able to handle the snap, cost his team about 10 points there. And I say this because all week he was in the media taking interviews, labeled himself the swaggiest punter in the NFL. Very thankful for what Travis Kelce did to him in the end zone. I am shocked someone has not put this guy on his ass. Can you envision a long snapper doing his job and like doing some celebrations every time he made a great long snap, or an offensive lineman every time he made a pancake block acting like a total buffoon? I'm shocked somebody hasn't sent this guy to, you know, into a body bag at this point.
It is a different world we live in, where punters want to celebrate like their stud defensive ends and their elite level quarterbacks, but To King's credit, he still is one of the better punters in the league, but know your role, go out there, do your job, and act like you've been there before. Kind of always my mantra. Sticking in the AFC West, pain, the Broncos on the road, a hard-fought loss against the Tennessee Titans. I guess the big story here was offensive ineptitude, not only for Denver in the first half, but you look at the Titans, they did nothing in the second half. Marcus Mariota finishes the game 6 of 20. Denver plus 95 in total yards after spotting the Titans a 13-point lead. I mean, I know you didn't spend a ton of time watching this game, and I'll be curious to get your take on what you pull out of it when you go through the all-22 footage. But my Lord, these are two teams vying for playoff spots, and this game looked like anything but a hard-hitting playoff battle, at least from the offensive side of things.
Yeah, I haven't watched this in full detail yet. Obviously saw the box score, looked at some of the efficiency metrics. Simeon dealing with the foot injury. Now, the Titans' defense, their secondary is extremely weak. I'm looking at this 35 for 51 for 334, no interceptions. I'm shocked they weren't able to convert more points out of that, just what my eyes tell me. We've talked about the progression of Marcus Mariota, and I rifled off a bunch of stats last week in terms of what he's done since week 6, but I told you the all 22 said this guy's still missing some throws. He's still not overly efficient in a lot of categories. And yes, DeMarco Murray went out there 92 yards on 21 carries, but Delanie Walker was shut down a little bit. And when the ground game isn't perfect, and the offensive line isn't perfect, Marcus Mariota continues to struggle a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, it's a team that I think, you know, has reached their ceiling. It'll be interesting when we watch them this weekend for their trip to Arrowhead, because the strength of that offense is running the football. And as you alluded to when we talked about the KC Raiders game, Kansas City may have some major question marks stopping the run, but Travis Kelce could be poised for a big day against the Titans secondary. One last thing on this game, and I know you saw it, Harry Douglas's cheap shot diving at Chris Harris's knees. I don't care what sport you play, there is no place in professional athletics for that take, for that going on a football field.
Extremely odd. I first of all, Tlaib did exactly what he should have done. There should have been a freaking melee there. So I'm all for that. I will tell you this, a little out of character for Harry Douglas. Know him, spend some time with him just due to who his brother is in the Florida State connection there. Very out of character moment, very weird, must have been something said throughout the course of that game. But, you know, there's one thing about your typical trash talk going one-on-one with a guy every single snap and doing what Harry Douglas did, inexcusable. And if I'm Tlaib, there's a reason why guys in the locker room love him. And you can say whatever you want to say about Tlaib. He's a little bit of a loose cannon, tough to control off the field, but his talent on the field, his passion, I am all for what should have happened. And I'm shocked it didn't go and escalate a little further than it did.
Denver almost putting themselves in what will amount to a must-win situation this coming Sunday when New England heads into Invesco Field. Texans Colts, you talk about inefficiency in Marcus Mariota, Brock Osweiler, the poster child for such inefficiency. But the Texans get a hard-fought victory as nearly a touchdown underdog against the Colts. Texans finish the game paying 4.7 yards per play to the Colts 5.7. But importantly, as we know in the National Football League, if you win the turnover battle where the Texans were plus two, they were able to take care of business. Brock, a workmanlike, and that may be generous again, 147 yards. More importantly, though, the dynamic duo of Alfred Blue and Lamar Miller carry the ball 37 times between them for 162 yards, more or less eliminating the Colts from the playoff picture.
And I think that's the perfect touching point, because we've hit on this, and I'm not 72-year-old, you know, get your kid off my lawn guy, and I know where the NFL's going, I know where it is, I know where it's going to continue to head, and it's this pass, spread you out type of offenses. But in December, teams that can run the ball control the games. And yes, the yards per play metrics weren't very good, but the Texans kept possession, and there was a few times there, third and one or first and goal from the five, where they chose to kind of put it in Brock's hands as opposed to continue pounding this Colts defense that was without Robert Matthews, that was without DeQuell Jackson. The ground game kept the tempo, kept the pace in their favor, and that's one thing that you have to do this time of year to win games is control the game, control the tempo. You dictate pace, and that's what happened with the Texans. 185 total yards on the ground, kept possession, kept the Colts off the field, and out of rhythm, really. That's the biggest thing here. When you talk about these passing offenses, when they get going, when they're in rhythm, tough to stop. But if you keep them on the sidelines and they spend time on the sidelines, it's tough to get them going. It's tough to get the car, the engine going and keep those offenses in rhythm.
It is, and it's amazing. We'll see the Texans again this week, kind of controlling their own destiny within the division, playing host to the Jacksonville Jaguars, a role that they may not exactly thrive in as over field goal favorites. I don't think it'll get a ton of attention from us on the Thursday edition of the podcast, but a big win nonetheless for Houston going on the road and doing so, aided mainly by their defensive performance. A team that was not aided by their defensive performance, paying the Seattle Seahawks, losing 38-10 to Green Bay. It was the first loss for Seattle by more than 10 points since week 8 of 2011. Aaron Rodgers, we know he's taken his game to another level. The 38 points the Packers scored was actually their season high. Oddly enough, Seattle does win the box score, plus 24 in total yards. That can be rather misleading. When you finish the game, minus 6 in turnover margin. Russell Wilson, 5 picks. But I guess the bigger story here, bad game we kind of throw out with Seattle and their pedigree, or was there something more to it defensively with no Earl Thomas? The teams that can throw with a vertical passing attack are going to give the Seahawks problem. And on the other side, have the Packers found something defensively that we actually think is sustainable with three straight above-average performances where they've held opponents to 15 points or less?
This was probably one of the more intriguing games of the day. I am going to go back, watch this game maybe a second time and maybe even a third time, because a lot of the things in this game can really dictate what happens moving forward. But then you want to take a step back and say, listen, Seattle, short week, looked like world beaters on national TV Sunday night, travel across the country, some cold weather. We know their road-home dichotomy. So it's tough to really dig into that. But when you look at Russell Wilson this season, he's had fantastic games or he's had really, really bad games. And this was one of those really bad games. You definitely want to credit the Packers defensively, getting a couple guys healthy on that side of the ball. We talked about Clay Matthews potentially not being 100%, really near 60%. But what they're doing is limiting his on-field time, playing him on third downs. And we look at some of these efficiency metrics for the Packers. With him on the field on third downs, opponent offense is converting roughly 35% of them. With him off the field, over 50%. So knowing he's banged up but limiting his usage to third down, I think, is a fantastic idea. And we talked about this Packers offense a month ago, 2 months ago. We said, hey, listen, they're not very good right now. It's Aaron Rodgers. I can kind of be able to say, I'm going to adapt. I'm going to adjust a little bit. A lot of his weapons are healthier. When you talk about Jordy Nelson fully recovered now off the knee injuries, you talk about Adams dealt with two ankle injuries last year. We know how pivotal that is for a receiver being able to get in and out of your breaks. And when you talk about what this offense has done the last 3 weeks, it's against the Eagles, Texans, Seahawks, all teams top 15 in defensive efficiency. And when you talk about the Eagles and Seahawks, two teams that are in top 5 of defensive efficiency categories.
Yeah, this is a Green Bay team that you could have had at 70-1 to win the Super Bowl a few weeks ago. I said people shouldn't get too excited too quickly when it came to Green Bay beating Philadelphia, but they've been able to sustain some of that momentum and carry it forward, making them a very much relevant piece of the NFC playoff picture. Some breaking news, Payne, from the ranks of college football right in your backyard. Lane Kiffin officially named the head coach in lovely Boca Raton of the Florida Atlantic Owls just a few moments ago.
I will tell you about it. That area stocked like a trout pond, so Lane should have some nice off-the-field time here in Boca Raton. I will say this, though. Nice facility. Recently built stadium. Now, it's not this elaborate 110,000, you know, seat stadium, but it's a brand new stadium, brand new field. And I think the bigger thing is, and I'm probably going to butcher his name, I believe it's DeAndre Johnson, was kicked off FSU's team for a little domestic abuse thing that later got thrown out. He was a quarterback, 4-star kid. He transferred to FAU. So now you talk about Lane Kiffin in that conference having a FSU quality caliber 4-star quarterback. They're going to make some noise, and I think they're going to do so quickly.
And why do I bring up Lane Kiffin to transition to the final portion of our Week 14 recap? Because we want to talk some dumpster fires. And there were three of those in the league, the Rams, 49ers, and Browns. I'm not sure which direction you want to go in. One thing I do want to hit on, Payne, before we actually get into that trio of terribleness, some major impactful injuries, one in your backyard as well. Ryan Tannehill appears to be lost for the season. torn ACL at the quarterback spot, Matt Stafford, torn ligaments in his hand. By all accounts, he's going to try and give it a go with a glove the remainder of the season. You talked about Derek Johnson, torn Achilles, and the Chargers, a pair of injuries. No one sure of the severity of either yet. Melvin Gordon left the game against the Panthers with a hip, and Joey Bosa sidelined in the third quarter. So some key contributors that took it on the chin and maybe a little nicked up and or sidelined for a major portion of the remainder of the season.
Yeah, and I think we can probably, I know we touch on look-ahead lines coming up, we can probably elaborate on a few of those injuries and their potential worth as we discuss a lot of those look-ahead lines. I know, looking at the movement on the screen, yes, some spots and situations, but a lot of that to do with some of those aforementioned injuries.
Yep, and then, like we said, three teams that have been tough for books to get any money on. I'm not sure they'll get a whole lot moving forward. The Rams, who we'll see on Thursday Night Football, a game that we'll break down in more detail when they're head up to the Northwest to take on Seattle as part of our American Gaming Association Big Game Breakdown. Todd Gurley calls the Rams a middle school offense. How bad is Jared Goff, I guess, is the $100 million question here.
Accurate. It looks like a middle school offense. It kind of always has under Jeff Fisher. Jared Goff, not great. and I want to put that nicely. Now, he's had, what, two or three starts. We know he can throw the ball. The decision-making, not always there. When you have to play him out of shotgun because he's not very efficient under center, when he really didn't have to call any of his own plays in college or audible out of plays, it's going to be an adjustment period. Now, doesn't have a lot of talent around him. Same situation we saw with Sam Bradford. So that's kind of the thing here. No offensive line, no real weapons at wide receiver. You do have a great running back. It looks like a lot of his years in tread on the tires are being wasted because there isn't an offensive line. But I think the biggest thing here, when a coach's job is on the line, you can tell what a team thinks of him, not by the outcome, but because there's talent deficiency there. But you can tell a lot by the energy, the effort, the care, the focus of what a team feels about its coach when he's on the hot seat. And you look at the opening kickoff, it's kind of a microcosm of what they think about Jeff Fisher.
I mean, I think I saw a stat, and I don't have a chance to pull it up on my timeline, that there have been 10 games where teams have lost by 28 points or more so far this season in the National Football League. Three of those 10 games have been the Los Angeles Rams. Not exactly painting a picture of upward and mobility where a team that's improving week over week.
It's brutal, and you talk about Jeff Fisher's inability offensively and what Gurley's saying about his offense. Now, this is a guy who, Gurley, from what I know, and maybe the L.A. scene has gotten to him, he's a pretty humble guy, pretty cerebral guy. And when you talk about what he had with Mark Richt offensively, I mean, you can kind of gauge. He's not an idiot. He can see what they're doing offensively. And there was another stat that said the Falcons scored 6 touchdowns against the Rams this week in L.A. The Rams have only scored 5 touchdowns all season at home.
that tells you all you need to know about exactly where this team is going. And they're in big trouble, not only from the on-the-field stuff, but when you start to border on irrelevant in a market like Los Angeles, the Rams are headed down a path that previous professional football teams in that area have done, especially with USC on the ascent, the Lakers being much improved, and of course the Clippers being a very relevant piece of the National Basketball Association. One last team, Payne, the Browns. First off, is this team going to win a football game? And secondly, what do books have to do to try and price this team in an affordable window? I had a Browns ticket yesterday, +6, and wanted to throw that thing into the circular file when they went down 20 to zip.
Well, the books got their wish. They did get a little bit of professional money on the Browns. I was one of them. Nothing like taking 6 and it closing soft 4 and never having a chance. So, you know, when it comes to pricing them in the market, I'm not sure we're going to see much more of an adjustment because professional bettors see value, saw value at 6. Now, I'm not sure it was so much the number, but the spot, the situation. Hugh Jackson talked a nice game, said he took 36 hours off during the bye and then got right back into Cincinnati. It was a team that he's very familiar with. New player tendencies, new coaching tendencies. This was the Browns Super Bowl for 2 weeks. You hear nothing as a player, but are you going to go 0-16? So this was their Super Bowl. It looked like they got out of the gates a little bit slow. RG3, oof, not very good. And
the,
I think
the fact
this
that he's getting burned as a starting quarterback right now, and you have Cody Kessler, you should be trying to figure out if he can at least be a suitable backup quarterback. It's mind-boggling to me how they've handled the guys under center.
That's his guy, Hugh Jackson. Now, listen, there wasn't a lot to choose from when you talk about the NFL offseason and free agent quarterbacks. But Hugh chose him. Hugh said, I'm good. Give me RG3. Now, a lot of that is Hugh Jackson's ego. We've talked about this. Fantastic offensive mind. But there's a reason why that fantastic offensive mind interviewed for a slew of jobs, head coaching jobs over the last few seasons, and declined. And there was a reason why he ended up in Cincinnati, when a guy like Adam Gase could have got Cincinnati last year and declined. His ego is very large. And my feeling is he thought he could be the guy to turn RG3's career around. RG3 with probably four games left to show the world that he could be a potential starter. He feels obligated to give him that opportunity. But Cody Kessler is far and away this team's best quarterback. I think you need to see what you have for the future. And my feeling is if you started Kessler this week, you probably had an outside shot at winning the game. Look at all the quarterback metrics. Cody Kessler has been an average quarterback this season. Literally an average quarterback this season. So he is a huge upgrade over RG3 or anybody else on that roster.
Do you believe any of the rumors out there that the Browns are going to do everything they can to put together a package and trade for Jimmy Garoppolo this offseason? Can you see a scenario where not only does it make sense from the Browns standpoint, but it's something that New England would consider as well?
I don't think there is a scenario where a guy like Bill Belichick and a team like the Browns that have a ton of assets, and there's clearly a relationship there, they've already traded for Jamie Collins, that window door isn't wide open for possibility. I think when you look at Tom Brady, probably has a couple seasons left in him. You talk about the talent deficiency on the side of the ball for New England, and if you can stockpile some draft picks and you can, you know, get a couple nice integral young parts to go with Brady in that offense, I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, and I think when you look at what the Browns can possibly offer, like, they stockpiled a bunch of picks this year. So I think that definitely presents possibility for Belichick, and especially since there's already a relationship there.
Yeah, it could be interesting to watch and see how that potentially develops. The future of New England, there are lights that a lot of people were saying was going to be Garoppolo, but who knows? But as you mentioned, Tom Brady, you have to do everything you can to kind of stock the pond and win as many championships while you have a first ballot Hall of Famer there in the midst. From what we saw in NFL Week 14, pain on the football field, to the silver screen movie review Monday, Nocturnal Animals was the choice, and I don't think either of us are really disappointed.
It was wild. It was interesting, and it was weird. I decided to go with, and I talked to you about this, decided to go with a little popcorn this time. And I think I only ate two handfuls of it after the opening scene.
You know what? The opening scene is interesting, and we won't ruin it for anybody. It has very little bearing on the plot of the movie, but I'll say it had that cinematic, artistic feel to it, to say the least. I, however, was still okay eating popcorn because I don't let that kind of stuff deter me. But I think people, if they're getting to the movie a few minutes late, not really sure they'll know what to expect to set the tone for the movie. But you're right. I didn't know exactly how the plot line was going to play out. I will tell people who go in and watch, it's not an action film or anything like that. You sit back. You do have to do some thinking. You do have to digest the plot a little bit. And there are a number of things going on that kind of paint a bigger picture with symbolism. And it had more of that art. I don't want to say artsy movie feel to it, but definitely different than a big ticket blockbuster, so to speak.
There was certainly some artsiness to it. And I think you're stomach being able to handle that opening scene really just paints a picture of the kind of women you're able to deal with.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go. Shots fired here on this Monday morning. It was just a matter of time.
Some twists and turns. I thought the acting was great, probably a bit biased because I loved all the actors. And one that I thought really did a fantastic job is our boy Michael Shannon from Boardwalk Empire was in it, played a great role. I really like kind of being able to see guys that I like in other movies or other shows, and then all of a sudden they just pop up into a movie. You're like, oh my God, that was fantastic. So definitely worth the watch, and it was definitely a little out of our comfort zone. So for us to like it, endorse it, For something that was out of our comfort zone, it, I think, is a big thumbs up for a movie like this.
Jake Gyllenhaal quickly climbing up the Bet the Board Movie Review Monday Power Rankings with these performances he's putting together.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that.
Also, we talk about movies that we've seen in the theaters. You have a movie that you've been instructed to watch, which I think is set to DVR at some point later today. So I'll be curious to get your assessment there. We may have to go to, you know, Layer Cake and see what Payne thinks of his man Tom Hardy's performance there.
Oh, it's actually set to DVR on the 14th.
Okay.
At like 4 a.m. is when I found it. Layer Cake, definitely one we'll talk about because I have a man crush on Tom Hardy. I think he's got a new series coming out on FX called like Taboo to bring in the, I think in January it starts. But what was the other movie that you wanted to see with one of the Affleck brothers?
Oh, that I think we'll make.
Shockingly this, takes place in Boston.
Yeah, that we'll make this week's movie for next week's movie review Monday, Manchester by the Sea. And judging, it's not, again, it's not in our comfort zone. I feel like, you know, we're doing a little bit more to try and expand our horizons. But this movie, Payne, has been written up in a number of spots. And I think looking at Rotten Tomatoes, which I know we often disagree with how they rate it, they gave this thing a 97%. I don't think I've seen a movie get pegged that high. So if this thing disappoints me, I'm going to be pretty pissed off.
Who comes up with the Rotten Tomatoes stuff? I'm not a Rotten Tomato guy. I'm an IMDb guy. I'm a guy of the people.
Oh man,
who
I forgot.
Voice their
Payne
opinions
Payne
and rate
a
these
man
things.
Of the people.
There's no question about that. Yeah, man of the people.
People's champ. People's champ over there. What I don't even know. What did IMDb give Manchester by the Sea? If you have that handy?
I believe it was 8.6 out of 10.
Okay, so we'll have to see exactly how that goes. But Manchester by the Sea will be the flick. Maybe another cerebral edition. It's supposed to be a little dark and gloomier plot line, so check that out. Offer up your criticisms, your critiques. And as always, if you guys have any movies you think we should see, DVR, you know, Netflix, in the theaters, share those at BetTheBoardPod on social media. We're always checking those mentions. You can tweet them to Payne at Payne Insider and me as well at Todd Furman. And folks, if you haven't been to the Bet the Board website, be sure to check that out. BetTheBoardPodcast.com or Bet the Board. I always get this wrong, Payne. BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Is that what we have these days for our URL?
Yep. We also own a bunch of other ones. BetTheBoard.net, if that's easier. That gets you there as well.
All right. I know some of this stuff gets rerouted, but we'll have some articles up there looking to put forth a bowl preview, some tips for some of the novices out there to make sure they don't get fully immersed too quickly in some of the garbage that you'll see starting as early as Saturday this college football postseason. But on to some of the look-ahead lines, Payne, and we don't have to spend a ton of time on these. Thursday night's game, Seahawks-Rams, we were looking forward at this game, and you had Seattle, a 12.5-point favorite. The Seahawks get blown out, the Rams get blown out, and the number balloons out to a full 2 touchdowns at BetOnline, where Seattle is a 14-point chalk, total 39.5.
Awful loss. It appears they are now out of the 2 seed, which would have been a first-round bye. So some things to play here for Seattle. We know sometimes that Rams defensive line gives that offensive line some issues. Not really sure Goff and that high school offense can take advantage of the loss of Earl Thomas to that secondary. This could be a tough spot. This could be the end of Jeff Fisher. This could be ugly.
But he signed an extension.
Yeah, I get that. I saw an opening of what, 12.5, 13? My numbers make it a touch higher.
Yeah, this game will be interesting Thursday. Of course, we'll spend a little bit more of an extended breakdown here trying to make a case for laying nearly 2 touchdowns in the league or trying to go to the window with an underdog. This game impacted by an injury. It'll be in prime time on Saturday evening. The Miami Dolphins now a 2.5-point road favorite as they head up the East Coast to take on the Jets. That 2.5 number at BetOnline, you do have to lay $1.20. Total here, 40.5. This number on the look-ahead pane had the Dolphins listed as over a field goal favorite at 3.5. Naturally, the market had to adjust for the absence of Ryan Tannehill.
I will say this about Matt Moore. He's had some mop-up duty and some spot play the last few seasons. I think 2011, I'm looking at this right now, 2011 was really the last time Matt Moore was called upon to start a bunch of games. He was more than competent. As I look at this now, completed 61% of his passes, 7.2 yards per pass a play, 18 total touchdowns to 9 interceptions, had a passer rating over 87. You obviously hate to see Ryan Tannehill go down if you're the Dolphins, a team that kind of controls their own destiny. We saw strides that Tannehill was making under Gase, so it's tough. You get a big win, but there was some somber stuff going on in that locker room. I will say this, Matt Moore has a very talented arm. he might even have a more talented arm than Ryan Tannehill. He's California cool. And we saw that. He comes into the game, drops a dime, getting smacked in the face, plants one perfectly to Kenny Stills late in that game. Weather, cold off the bench. But he is a gunslinger. His good is very good. His bad is out of the league bad. But Gase is that QB whisperer, and he's won games with Tebow. He was able to kind of rein in Jay Cutler, who I think's a pretty good comparison to Matt Moore. So this is going to be fun to monitor. And the interesting part might not be during the games, but practice. You're going to have to do a lot of reading. Because Matt Moore, as I alluded to, kind of California cool. Let's put this nicely. He's very lax at practice. No real ambition to be the starter. When Tannehill was struggling, there was no push from him in practice over the years to be the starter. And Adam Gase is kind of that guy that says, practice how you play on Sunday, starts guys who practice better during the week. So this is going to be something fun to monitor throughout the course of each week during practice.
There's nothing wrong with being a career backup. Just ask Derek Anderson. He's made quite a nice living for himself backing up Cam Newton and other quarterbacks down there in Carolina. One last thing, Payne, I know we talk about it all the time. Safe to assume the Jets showing a little bit of fight in the second half from the 49ers. There could be some carryover here knowing how heated this rivalry gets and how close the first game was between these teams.
Yeah, this is always a throw the record out type of matchup. Both these teams hate each other. It will be interesting to monitor this just a little bit. You talk about their Super Bowl against the Patriots. You lay an egg against the Colts, short week, travel out to the West Coast. Now you have to travel back home. So not an ideal spot for the Jets either. It'll be interesting to see where this dips based upon Tannehill's perceived downgrade to Matt Moore. When you talk about this Dolphins defense, what I've been talking about a little bit, and you talk about that Jets secondary, and you talk about Matt Moore potentially being this gunslinger, positive in both directions, the total feels a little light right now, but certainly this time of year, you're going to want to wait out, monitor that weather in New York.
And that very total on the move as we speak, but not in the direction you and I anticipated it going. Something to keep in mind. A game that's changed a little bit based on public perception, the Sunday night affair where Dallas will play host to the white-hot Tampa Bay Bucks. Look-ahead number for this game had the Cowboys listed as a 9.5-point chalk, disparate results on Sunday, and all of a sudden, BetOnline using the Cowboys is only 7-point favorites in this particular spot. Total in the game, 46.
Feels like a tough spot for the Bucks. The defense has improved the last month of the season. They're still having some issues stopping the run, even with McCoy's dominance in the interior. We've talked about this ad nauseum of the receivers that present issues for the small Bucks secondary. And when you think about Dez Bryant off a poor performance, fumbling the game away. Williams, who's emerged, who's that tall receiver there, has some height over those DBs. That could present some issues.
And I have to imagine Dak will play with a bit of a chip on his shoulder now. Three straight performances we talked about, struggling in the passing game. I expect the Cowboys to look much better. But again, we'll cover this game in greater detail with injury information. Be interesting to watch where this number goes. A number that's already been on the move, the Green Bay Packers at BetOnline now, a 7-point favorite. And I think this is a fair assessment given their current form. Total in this game, 43.5, Payne. Last night, I was a little bit shocked, and I'm not critical of odds makers or our compatriots on the other side of the counter, to see BetOnline use the Packers -5, knowing full well how difficult it was going to be to get a single Bears bet. Look-ahead number here was 4, but I think a 3-point adjustment given the current form and what these two teams playing for, more than warranted in this spot.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it short and simple. I won't disagree with you, I should say.
And from a game at Soldier Field with the red-hot Green Bay Packers to a Chiefs game against the Tennessee Titans at Arrowhead that I think is one of the more fascinating matchups. Right now you're looking at Kansas City, a 5-point home favorite for this one at BetOnline. Total here, 43. Look-ahead number did have it at 6. And you even saw some other offshores use 6, immediately taking some money on the underdog.
We have talked about this, and again, it sucks, but every single week, every single game, this time of year, you're going to have to check for the weather. We discussed what Chiefs home games look like at Arrowhead in terms of scoring. We saw a game that just went dead in the second half. But this is going to be interesting because there's good matchups for both teams here. When you talk about the ground and pound of Tennessee and the issues that Casey has stopping the run, and now again, Derek Johnson out. But you talk about that Titans secondary, one of the worst in the NFL, and these added weapons for Alex Smith, that could be an interesting total to look at as well.
In the battle of who could care less in the desert, the Arizona Cardinals, a 2.5-point favorite at BetOnline, playing host to the New Orleans Saints, total on the game 50. Look-ahead number had the Cardinals a slightly higher favorite, but threw the key number at 3.5.
Scares me a little bit with the Saints. We talked about the adjustment of Sean Payton being the play caller. A lot of questionable decisions there, but when you look at this total, potentially a little suppressed when you talk about the Cardinals playing in inclement weather. Yes, it did go over. Saints went under, dropped 2 touchdowns, could have had another 8 points on the board. So the totals, you know, with the weather and the Saints drops, a little suppressed here. Neither team really playing for much. Be interesting to see if some of those nagging injuries to Patrick Peterson, now that the season's all but over, if he continues, if he decides to sit it out. Palmer has not been very good under pressure. Was very good when he didn't have pressure against Miami, but they got to him a bunch and he kind of just throws it up. So gonna have to monitor that total a little bit.
Yeah, Drew Brees the last 2 weeks, no touchdown passes, 6 interceptions. The Arizona defense could be a cure-all for all that. And last but not least, the AFC West showdown between the Chargers and Raiders. Pretty big movement here, some of it attributed to injuries. The Chargers were a 1-point favorite on a look-ahead number, playing host to Oakland, looking to get revenge for a game that slipped through their fingers earlier this season. Now we see Oakland a 2.5-point favorite at BetOnline. You have to lay $1.25, so obviously this game trending towards a full field goal. Total here at 50.
Possibly no Gordon, no Bosa. The slew of injuries continues to hit the Chargers. Similar to the Rams situation, not really getting off the bus for Jeff Fisher. We saw with McCoy potentially on the hot seat, there wasn't a lot of effort put forth in Carolina, just didn't get off the bus. This kind of is their rivalry game, so to speak. My hope is that, not really sure they get a win here, but can still push our win total. I think you get the Browns. You're not going to want to be the team that goes 0-13, gives them their win, preventing them from, you know, going 0-16. And then you get a home game against a Chiefs team to end the season that could potentially be the last game in San Diego, or potentially have a Kansas City team that's wrapped up the division with not much to play for. So should be interesting there. Still some outside hopes for a push with our win total, even if they drop this game to the Raiders.
Yeah, I don't think in the history of me betting win totals I've ever been more emotionally attached or invested, depending on what adjective you want to use, than what the San Diego Chargers have created for this year. A roller coaster that continues to go through ups and downs and will inevitably lead us to more of them over the final 3 weeks of the regular season. But Payne, the moment that all of our loyal listeners have been waiting for through our banter, through our diatribes, whatnot, the breakdown of the Monday night football game, courtesy of the American Gaming Association between the Ravens and Patriots. But first, the American Gaming Association encourage you guys to check out all the great work they're doing for ongoing legalization efforts. You can do that by going to AmericanGaming.org or following them on Twitter at Ammer, A-M-E-R, Gaming, G-A-M-I-N-G-A-S-S-N. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. If you want to get their real-time newsletters directly to your email, americangaming.org/about/contact and Payne, the Ravens, a spot where they won't be intimidated, going into Foxborough to take on the Patriots. BetOnline has New England a 6.5-point favorite, a soft 6.5 at that. Total here, 44.5, trending downwards. First off, we may as well start at the top with the line move here. This number on a look-ahead would have been 10. You saw most books open 7.5, and you've seen a steady flow of Ravens money through the key number of 7, approaching 6 at some spots.
I want to start by making this very clear, because it's apparently what's needed. I haven't bet this game. And at the current BetOnline pricing at the time of recording, you know, BOL using 6.5 and 44.5. So I won't have a position on it unless something changes. As you alluded to, very sharp money on Baltimore at 7.5 from a specific group. Not an overly successful group in the NFL, so take it for what it is. But that's the information. That's the reality.
But they do have strong market influence in the NFL, even if they're not producing winners on a week-to-week basis.
Absolutely, and it's because some other parties have quietly, or you know, taken the year off, so to speak. Of the Raven, and I want to break this game down a little bit from both angles, and I think that's needed, and that's kind of how I look at every single game from an unbiased perspective. I want to see the positives, the negatives from each side, and not just base something off of one side. Of the Ravens' 7 wins, 5 of them are the Browns twice, Jaguars, Bengals, and Bills. They have combined for a 13-51 record, and that is accounted for 72% of the Ravens' wins. So the other two games you look that they won were their Super Bowls. First one, Big Ben's initial game back, he looked like he was 60% at best, and they almost pissed that one away at home. You're out gained, out first downed in that game. The winning touchdown was a blocked punt for touchdown. Their best win of the season by far was last week against the Dolphins, so they were absolutely dominant in that setting. I'll say this. I've been pounding the table here a little bit before most about the improvements on offense for the Ravens. When we started this movement, so to speak, a few weeks ago, the Ravens were dead last in offensive efficiency. I just felt like Flacco, off the knee injury, still wasn't 100%. He's getting there. The rookie Dixon, who had the knee injury to start the season, now getting acclimated a little bit. Perriman, your first-round pick from a year ago, missed the entire season. Really getting into the mix now. Steve Smith Sr. had missed a few games. And more importantly, you drafted a left tackle in Ronnie Stanley, and your best interior lineman in football in Marshall Yanda had missed some time. They're all back. I just felt like the offense would be trending upwards with all those elements. And I think one of the bigger things, and we've touched on this a little bit, offensive coordinator Marty Mordenwing and Flacco had a sit down, put everything on the table, and they said, we need more tempo. We need more passing. We need more aggression. And I think that showed last week and will continue, you know, moving forward a little bit.
A couple of questions here. Let's start with the line, and then I'll get into some more of the X and O's. You mentioned the Ravens and their ongoing improvements on the offensive side. You watch more tape than just about anybody. I know what the metrics say defensively. Is this Ravens defense as good as the numbers suggest?
I think so. I believe so. And we initially talked about this Ravens defense a few weeks ago being very efficient, but having not really played a ton of great offenses. And this adjusts and changes weekly based upon who you play. So all of a sudden, you fast forward, they're now number 2 in defensive efficiency, and they've faced, you know, the 9th toughest slate of offenses. So I believe they're real. They're starting to get healthy in the secondary. They're starting to get a lot of pressure, a lot of those defensive guys on the line. Doomerville getting healthy. The linebacker core getting healthy. So I think they are legit. There's no doubt about that.
When we look at the way they match up defensively against this Patriots offense, do we see any areas to exploit? Do we think we're going to see a lot of dink and dunk from Tom Brady to try and protect that knee and make it less vulnerable to T Sizzle coming off the edge to try and put a little bit of pressure on Tommy Terrific?
For the Patriots offensively, I think the easy way to put this is their metrics don't quite equate to 10-2.
Okay.
Offensive efficiency, you know, they haven't played many good defenses, really, when you look at this. So many question marks about Belichick in that side of the ball. Defensively, there's some issues, too. 20th in defensive efficiency through 13 weeks. They've faced the easiest slate of opponent offenses, too. I think we've kind of alluded to, offensively, a lack of chemistry right now. You get Deion Lewis back, trying to get him acclimated. Getting new guys in the fold also offensively, Bennett and Hoggett on the same page with Brady. You do lose Gronk, and I saw this circulating, and I think, again, I like to look at all sides of the story. So I saw this circulating on social media. I can't remember quite where it came from, but it alluded to Brady being really down, or I should say much more down, when it comes to Gronk being out. His QBR rating dips 15 percentage points with Gronk out. His touchdown to interception rate with Gronk in is 5-1, dips to 2.5-1 with him out. Now, I think that takes a hit when you don't have a complementary piece. Yes, He used to have one. He's now sitting in jail. But I think Martellus Bennett.
That's the first Aaron. That's the first Aaron Hernandez reference we've had on this podcast in 2 years. Well done.
No doubt about it. But I think Martellus Bennett is kind of that guy. I'm not sure the drop is all that precipitous with him out there in a new offense, a complex one that many have failed to grasp and pick up. He's graded out the seventh best tight end. So I think you need to get Bennett more acclimated into the system.
Malcolm Mitchell, baby, the key to the Patriots' success. One last thing about this game, when we talk about the number, we know the Patriots were inflated. We've seen money come in against them last week for some pretty sharp guys against the Rams. Only scored 26 points, albeit in a cover. Do we feel this number right now is much more indicative of where the Patriots' power number is because some of the inflation has worn off that we saw after Tom Brady came back and this team was, you know, 9-1 against the spread or whatever the hell record they had accrued through the first 10 games or so?
It's so tough with New England because if you look at a lot of their metrics, their yard per play stuff over the course of time, it's usually not that ridiculously overwhelming and saying, wow, they're fantastic. It's about them being, it seems like when I look at these metrics throughout the course of time, they're certainly above average, but they do everything well. They don't beat themselves. They do the little stuff. On the kickoffs, they're popping it up, and your opponent's starting deep in their own end. They're not going out there and making mistakes. They make you beat them. So it ends up overcoming a lot of their efficiency metrics, their power rating numbers, because they do everything so well. Brady and Belichick do everything fantastic. Now, I will say this. At 10-2, Raiders lost. At 7.5, you can really go out there and win and not cover that big of a number initially. You're looking at a total 45, 44.5, a little bit lower than your average NFL total of 46. I think you probably see a low variance game plan here from New England. They like to run the ball. That will be interesting to see because Baltimore stops the run very well. Amendola out, Gronk out. We'll see. I don't have a ton on this game. I will tell you this, though. I think if this gets much lower, not only are we going to see buyback from the initial group that went under 7.5, but I think you'll have a brand new set of eyes, so to speak, on New England if this somehow dips to 5.5.
Do we think that's a very real possibility? I mean, I'm watching the market now. I know BetOnline's sitting at 6.5 minus 05, but there are other prominent books actually going to a soft 6 as we sit here and record. Do we think this number could trend to 5.5? Before kickoff?
I will say this. From a public perspective, I think this looks pretty split ticket-wise, so we're not going to really see the public have a say or you know, fluctuate this primetime game, which they definitely have possibilities to do when it comes to the NFL market. It would scare me if this got much lower because it lets you know the size of the position on Baltimore. But again, the person or the persons that created this initial steam, you respect them. You respect them probably more in other sports, but when it comes to the NFL groups, if they have a say, they're certainly not going to let the team that moved this market affect them.
The initial movers get them off the strength of the position.
Correct.
So, well, it should be a great game to watch, and unfortunately, no strong recommendations from us here at Bet the Board, but this is the kind of game I don't think you have to have a bet on paying to really enjoy it as a football fan, and maybe it's an appetizer for a matchup we'll see down the road in the AFC playoff picture. At the same time, though, I think a lot of folks would be surprised to know coming into this weekend, Baltimore still very much a long shot to make the playoffs. You look at their remaining schedule, the most difficult of any of those so-called AFC contenders down the stretch.
No doubt about it. And we love Harbaugh. We know he's had success here. We know he's given the New England Patriots a real run for their money. They are, and I've said this all along, they are one of the most physical teams in the NFL. And it really presents a lot of problems for teams that aren't physical, for teams that like to just pass. I could tell you it's a team that I've watched closely over the years because for whatever reason, they make it on the Dolphins schedule every single year, it seems. And when you had Philbin and when you have the current regime, physical football gives the Dolphins trouble. And so I can tell you, and you talk to any circle in the NFL, scouts, GMs, whatever it is, this Baltimore Ravens team has been prided on being the most physical team on the field, and it's tough to get blown out in situations like that.
Yeah, nothing strong from us here on Bet the Board, but doesn't have to stop you from walking to the window with a small investment to keep you engaged for Monday Night Football. Come Thursday, though, Payne, I'm sure our folks may want a little stronger opinion from you and I, because no one's going to sit there and watch the Rams trip up the coast to take on the Seattle Seahawks. But we'll have a deep dive for that brought to you from the American Gaming Association. As always, thanks to our parent sponsor, Bet Online. And of course, between now and then, check out at Bet the Board Pod on Twitter. Follow Payne there as well, at Payne Insider. You can follow me on Twitter, at Todd Furman. And of course, our Thursday guest, Dave Mason, at Dave Mason, B-O-L. In the meantime, best of luck with all of your wagers, both NFL and otherwise. And hopefully we'll see you at the window.